shit. It's live?
We're live.
You sure?
We're live.
We are live.
Sure. I mean, it says live, and it's like counting down seconds, but I'm not
is
really
Is it really
sure.
live? It could be zombie live, which is not really live if you think about it.
No, whoa.
So if we're wait, we're not dead. So are we undead?
Are we...
The Undead Robot Society
I'm just
podcast.
Wondering about the brains. Like, where are the brains?
There are
our viewers
here.
Have been asking
None.
That for years.
Are there brains? Is this zombie?
Roland's are mostly on display, and you can see everything, you know, except the brain itself right there.
I can't believe I'm the only one. Usually, I'm like, most of the group is like me.
Yeah.
I like how he phrases it. Most of the group is like me.
Like
not bald, not shaved-headed, like me. It's very general and kind of scary when you get to it.
I'm not bald.
Yeah, I have just a small solar panel back here that's powering things. Roland just went to all electric. He's just paneling the whole thing with some...
As long as I keep it shaved, you'll never know whether I'm bald or not.
It could be worse. That's true. You could just have a tonsure and... Just call it a day.
Oh, my.
I don't know that word.
It's what the monks have, where they just have the shave, the one spot in the back of their head. That's called a tonsure.
I have one of those wigs for Halloween.
Yeah, rather than the bowl,
fryer
just
tuck.
A teacup on there. And
I haven't had enough coffee for this show to start
with.
Well,
it's like when your bowl is too small, you cut it like that, and it's reverse.
Yeah.
Reverse
there bowl you cut. Go. Reverse bowl cut.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Dead Robot Society, where we have gone off the rails before the show even started. Joining us today, Roland Denzel and Troy Lambert, who are here to talk to us about Plotter and some of the things that go into plotting in the first place. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
I'd like to, warn you right now that you've executed poor judgment deciding to come on this show, as you may have already figured out, but it's too late now because we're live.
We committed.
We're here now.
You're here now. Roland is going through a storm where he is in California. All of you try to feel bad for him that he's going through a storm in California. I'm not hearing much sympathy, but we're going to really try and hope that they are going to give you some sympathy.
Yeah, we saw this stuff out there. It was called lightning, is what they called it.
And you looked it up online, Google?
I saw. And some leaves fell from the trees earlier, and it's unusual. Yeah.
Wow.
Ooh. You know, the next thing you know, you're going to have that guy from the Weather Channel show up. What is his name?
Jim Cantore.
Yeah, Jim Cantore is going to show up at your house. It's going to be terrible.
Jim Cantore showed up not 4 miles away from my house for one of the storms, I think in the mid-teens. And it was knowing that Jim Cantore is nearby is just you're filled with awe because, oh, my gosh, you've made it. And like, oh, shit, we're going to get hit really bad now, aren't we? And I think that was the year that we had to replace the carpet in the front two rooms because
flooding
water coming through the windows.
Hurricane coming through the windows.
It was a tropical storm, but it was only the storm was moving at 7 or 8 miles an hour, so it was stupid slow and just kept raining and
depressions and storms are the worst ones for flooding.
Yep.
Hurricanes destroy everything else.
Did you see the commercial they did for him where he shows up to vacation on the beach and causes a panic? It's a great commercial.
That would be a great commercial.
It was a great commercial.
So
he's like standing there like, what? What? Everybody's running around and fleeing and screaming. It's
oh my God,
terrible.
The tornadoes are coming. It's a bright, sunny day. What's wrong with you people? I can see this.
Mm-hmm. Well, a month or so ago, Roland approached me to talk about a program called Plotter. And I said, is that something to do with burial? And he said, no. So that's really all I need to hear. So I invited him on. Why don't you tell us what Plotter is, Roland? Why don't the two of you introduce yourselves and then tell me what Plotter is?
Okay. I'm Roland Denzel, and I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. And I am a nonfiction author and fledgling. I'm close to releasing an urban fantasy. And I am the marketing coordinator for Plotter, and been using Plotter for several years. And I joined Plotter maybe 6-8 months ago, and I've been loving it. And it's great learning more about plotting from Troy and Plotter from Troy. And yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Sure, we're happy to have you. Troy, we're sorry that you got settled with Roland, but you're here now.
I'm here now, and it's all right. I am Troy Lambert. I am the author of over 31 novels now. Finished number 31 a few days ago. I've been using Plotter for a long time. I was one of about the first 100 people in the country to even know it existed and use it, so that was kind of fun. And I joined Plotter in 2020 as the education lead, and that has evolved into way more than I thought it was ever going to be. So I teach a lot about Plotter and plotting because they kind of go hand in hand, because some people don't understand the plotting aspect, let alone why they should use a software for plotting and how it would possibly help them. So
I pretty much fall into that category as a pantser. I stumble my way through the story and then make myself look good in post.
There you go. And that's actually you're actually plotting later. You're still plotting. You're just plotting in your second or third draft or whatever it is that you do.
You're just not
plotting in the first draft.
I've written something along the lines of and published something along the lines of 40 novels at this point, and it's in the back of my head. So I have a decent grasp for where I want the story to go. So I don't really rewrite once I'm done as far as rearranging things. When I lay out that first draft, it's pretty much what I wanted in the first place. But I don't know from scene to scene precisely where it's going, and I may not know where the story is going to end when I start it.
Right. But you may have a general – so you may have a general direction.
Yes. I'm a general guy. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and you have an innate sense of story. Like, if you've been doing this for any length of time, like me, like, I can sit down and write, like, a short story. Now, usually my mysteries, I plan them out a little better because I want to know what the end is, and there's some things I want to know when I start. But I can sit down and write a short story, and it has pretty good story structure if I look back at it later. And the reason is I've been doing this for a really long time, so I have an innate sense of story structure. But especially when you're first starting out, new novelists,
yeah,
this is often why their first few novels are really terrible. And my first few are really terrible. They'll never see the light of day. But that's why they're terrible, is because they don't know anything about story structure. They don't know how to do it. And so they just wing it the whole way through a few times, and they come up with these disastrous things and say, what's wrong with this? And they can figure it out as they go along. But that innate sense of story structure is really important.
Yeah, I'm the same as
you. Can you imagine if one of those ransom hackers like got into your computer and said, "We have your first novel. Give us some of our money, or we're going to share it. We're going to share with the world."
Not a chance. The last time I saw some of my first novels from college, they were in WordPerfect 5 on a 3.5-inch.
Yes, yes. For those, you are the man.
For those listeners who don't know what that is, that's when that save icon on your computer 3D printed. That's what that is. That's what a 3.5-inch. 3.5 inches wide and 3D printed. But they were in WordPerfect 5. As far as I know, you can't recover that. And that's where they need to stay.
George R. R. Martin could recover it for you.
He's just going to kill it. He's going to kill everything. The computer, the dog, anybody that happens to be nearby. That's what's going
to
happen.
There are ways to fix that if you really wanted to recover them.
Oh, no. No. However, don't tell me about those ways. What's wrong with you?
I have tape backups with about 20 megs of all my writing in college. Now, keep in mind, this 20 megs on a tape cartridge in 1992 was a fucking big deal.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of shit on there, but I have no way to recover any of it. It's probably just going to be sitting there rotting in digital, or in analog, I should say, on the tape for the rest of eternity.
So, I'm pretty sure somewhere, either in my desk or in a storage closet, I have a zip drive. Like, it's a big fat zip disk.
Yeah.
I have that too. With a whole bunch of writing from, not in college, because that was all like nerdy technical writing, but any fan fiction that I cut my teeth on is all there, and it will never see the light of day because, no. The first stuff I wrote, it was not on, it was there. So on the Apple IIc, mm-hmm. way back,
mm-hmm.
there was, this was like when I was like, elementary school, there were two programs I remember using. One was called Kid Writer, which...
Yes.
You know that.
I had... Okay, yes,
so,
sorry.
So Kid Writer was... Writer was this, like, you could... You could put in, like, pixel art on the top to illustrate your stories, and then you could type, like, a little story on the bottom. It was really for kindergartners.
Yeah.
But then, like, the step up that went with the computer was called Bank Street Writer, and Bank Street Writer Plus. And ooh, it was
catchy.
Yeah. It was a word processing program, but the max number of pages that you could do was 15 pages. Because, ooh, as, like, a 10-year-old, I wrote some absolutely ridiculous Mary Sue something or other and had to use two files because I exhausted. It was, like, 20-some pages, and the file could not hold all of the brilliance that was in that piece.
We had to upgrade the RAM on my Apple IIc so it could open the file.
We never got that far. We that Apple IIc lasted until I was, I think, in eighth grade, and then we had the family computer that was a 486.
Ooh, good.
And yeah.
So. Yeah, my first was an XT that I built myself, and I remember it cost me almost $1,000 to build it, and it was a big deal because I had a huge hard drive that was like 512K or something like that. And it was huge. I was like, I am never going to fill up this hard drive ever.
And then when there's
so many versions. Files. Oh, yeah. We won't talk about that.
All right. I didn't have my own computer. I used a dumb terminal and a modem to dial into the
See, you're also of my tribe. You're also of my tribe. So
a prime mini computer.
So is this where we start talking about the 300 baud modems? We really probably shouldn't go down that.
I started at 2400. Sorry.
You guys are losers. I started at 300.
As a writer,
we all have our speeds, Paul.
1980.
I came into writing different because I'm a disgruntled reader that decided that I could write something better than what I was reading because I wasn't finding the stories that I wanted. So I've actually, even though I've published almost 40 novels, I've only been writing since about 2010. So, and it was mostly short stories up until about 2015. So the novels came in the last decade. So
nice. Yeah.
The first things that I wrote, I published under a pseudonym on a website and got feedback of what people thought from that. So those first few novels, they're out there. I had people tear them apart, and I learned from that. You don't have once you're done with that.
That's actually a good thing, though, because that brings it back to the fact that part of the process of plotting and writing is feedback. And it's not always pleasant, and you don't want it to be. I learned very early on, I did not want my friends to tell me, this is really good. That means nothing to me. I go into my critique group now, and I'm like, if you tell me you love it, I'm leaving. Like, I'm gone. I'm out. Because I can get that from anywhere, right? I need to know how to improve things, how to make them better. I need real feedback. I don't need you to tell me, oh, that was wonderful. Who cares? I mean,
and I don't want them to tell me how to fix it. I want them to tell me they've got a problem. No, it's my job to fix
wrong.
It. Just tell me I didn't like this part, and I'll think about whether or not it's something I need to fix or not. It's not a critiques group job to tell me this is how you make it better. I don't want to hear that. I want to go ahead and know where the problem is so I can make it better.
I want even your editor to tell me my stuff is good.
Lie to me. Lie to me, please.
No. The most frustrating thing is going into a place and knowing, like, you know, deep down, it's only at 80%, and you want that feedback to kick it up to 90 and 95, and you walk in like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. This is so good. Oh, you should put this out down. You're like, what are y'all smoking? Because this is crap. Tell me how, you know, tell me what isn't hitting. You know, read it again. Come back. Find one thing you don't like.
You don't know what I'm going through, Veronica.
No, I don't, but still.
Are we really going to go there? Are we really going to go there?
Wait a minute. This is your first urban fantasy that you're writing, so we just need to know, is anything sparkling? That's what we need to know.
No
sparkling?
Just the eyes. Probably. Sleeping in the light, sunlight, moonlight, you know.
And it might be forgivable. It might be forgivable.
Is that
I don't
its
know.
Own as long trope? As... Is that its own trope cliche? The sparkly eyes? Is that
No. Only I was just trying to think of some. I was just trying to think of the something that would be forgivable if it was sparkling.
I'm not that sure would that sparkle. Would be forgivable yeah. either.
Yeah. Is that a sparkle in your eye?
Yeah.
Maybe a Nicholas Sparks novel. That'd be okay.
Oh, that's not real. I don't think Nicholas Sparks does urban fantasy, does he?
He's got that one with the ghosts. The ghost that showed up at the end, like out of the blue. You're like, oh, that woman was a ghost all this time? Like, how about a little clue, some clues ahead of time?
I read something that's not, it wasn't urban fantasy, but when they filmed The Lord of the Rings, they used a special camera setup to film the actress playing Galadriel because she was the only elf still living in Middle-earth that had seen the trees of Valinor, so they wanted to see stars in her eyes. So if you watch her in there, they did something special with her eyes so that it would set it apart and then never told anyone.
Interesting.
Oh.
I like that, actually.
Oh, look.
There you go.
So plotter and plotting.
Yes.
You know, we didn't plot this show out in advance.
As the three hosts look at each other like, how do we segue back to what the hell?
As a pantser, I have a very leery eye on plotting, and I've seen it work for people. I'm not condemning it because it is who you are. If you're a plotter, you need to do that. If you're not a plotter, maybe there's some way that it can help you, but everybody's different. And I want to know a little bit more about the tool that you're coming with us today to tell how it helps these folks.
So there are a few ways that I see people use Plotter that are not plotters per se. One of them is to do nothing more than track their series Bible. So they're tracking their character traits and all that kind of stuff so that when Susie from book 2 shows back up in book 7, you don't have to go reread book 2 and see what color her eyes were and what color hair she had and what kind of a person she was. You have that recorded somewhere, written down somewhere in a series Bible.
Gosh, and that would have been nice for me before I got to book 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great place. So Plotter is a great tool like that. And I've known writers that are discovery writers who have paid people to go back and read all their books and create a series Bible.
Have you met Terry Mixon?
I actually paid somebody to go back and do that to create a story Bible
did you
for
really?
Mine. I
oh,
did.
My goodness.
Well, I have changed the names of people, of planets, of solar systems. I have done so many things
It is never good when, as one of Terry's narrators, when you get the script, and as you know, as a narrator, you wind up if you have a series, you start to catalog some.
You remember?
In your brain. I remember because I've got to make sure the voices match and the mannerisms and all that, and I get to it. And I remember one, and I messaged him, like, is this person on the other end of the line the same person here? And he goes, no. Why? I was like, they have the same last name. Oh, I need to change that. And then another book. And then another book was another Jacob? Really?
Too many Jacobs.
Another one?
And I've had a problem where I've had one character that had the same first and last names in the same series. Luckily, one of them was a bit part player and never showed up again. But nobody called me on it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, like I have really one really long series, and so I went through all my character names not very long ago and went, okay, enough Marys and Phillips. We're done with Mary and Philip. Okay, there's no need for another Mary or another Philip in this next book. There's, you know, it's so if nothing else, you can use it exclusively as a series Bible. If you look at the timeline in the outline section and you go, heck no, never going to happen. You can stay over in the characters and settings section and use it for that and use it as a series Bible. There are also people who just plan, like they know four or five things, like they plan a mystery, right? And so a mystery, they generally know who's going to die, who killed them, how they killed them. And then probably, especially if you're writing a series, you know who catches them because that's your main character. Otherwise, you're probably writing something else. But anyway, and it might be an accident. Who knows? But so you know certain things about your story and you use Plotter to track that. Then you discovery write in between those things. So you know what your climax is, you know, if you think. And there's a couple other ways that I see pantsers use Plotter. But what I find that's really interesting that you said is everybody is individual. Like, I'm kind of a middle, kind of a light plotter, and then I use plotter in the revision process to check my work. But I'm a light plotter initially. But then there's James Patterson, who writes a 20,000-word outline and knows the last word of his book before he starts it. Fuck, I can't be that guy.
Right? I learned that I needed to outline. Either. I outline a book as I write it. Every time I finish a chapter, I write down what happened, who was there, and the things that went on. So I'm keeping track of it, but not in advance. I'm just documenting it so I don't lose track of where I was and what people were doing.
Yeah, right. As you go, it kind of promotes that circle method that I see people use where they like they write what they wrote that day. The next day they come back and they read that, and then they start writing again. But instead of what some people have learned is instead of doing that, going back and reading that whole chapter, they write a summary of what they wrote at the end of that day. Yeah. And they just go back and read the summary instead of having to read the whole chapter and then start writing again the next day. And it's kind of this plot as you go, kind of I call it like a circle or a...
Dean Wesley Smith calls it cycling.
Yeah, cycling. Dean Wesley Smith. And like, I have mad respect for that man. I can't write like that. Like he does. Neither.
I tried that for multiple books. Could not do it.
Yeah, couldn't do it. But I have much respect for him. But I also know from interviewing like dozens and dozens of authors that everybody has a different process. And so they all say, well, I started this way and then. And the and then is the most important thing. The and then is how they made it their own. So it's the same thing with plotting and plotter is you approach it using a system and then that's usually not yours because you haven't developed one yet as a new writer, especially. And then you go, and then now I do this. And that is how you make it your own process. So for you, you may open plotter and go, maybe I should put that series Bible I paid somebody to create into plotter, right? But you may never use... you may never use the outlining in the timeline section of it.
Sadly, it's in OneNote, so good luck on me getting that out again.
Oh.
What is? I told you that was a bad call when you did it, but that's just me.
I thought for a second you were going to say Excel, and then I was really going to, my brain was going to like.
That's how we used to do it.
Excel.
Actually,
Excel,
this is true. I had a spreadsheet that had character names and bits. I still do it. And when I'm doing a book in a series, I do actually keep track in a spreadsheet to keep track of the names to make sure I don't repeat them. Because she yelled at me.
Veronica's giving me evil eyes.
I come at this. I have to outline because the majority of the projects I do are collaborative.
Yeah.
And when you've got two or even four authors working on something, you can't, to optimize the amount of time, if you've got four people who are only together for 2 hours a week to hammer out as much as you can, you're going to spend, I think we probably did 100, 120 hours total of outlining to get this chunk of stuff done. But that's so that when that outline is done and it's a 30-page outline with paragraphs of what goes here, here, and here, and who does what, so that when it's time to actually write, it's a very detailed map, and you're following that map over and over. So, and yeah, there's a spreadsheet in there, in a companion document that has the characters and names and a couple details, but at least with the collaborative writing piece, you're fleshing out the characters kind of as you go along and then iteratively modifying and tweaking things later. But the actual process of this happens here, this is discovered, this happens, we screw our main character over at this point and then happily ever after down the line, that gets laid out in detail.
Plotter just makes that visually easier.
Yeah.
Than doing a spreadsheet or having a Word document where you're flipping back and forth. So it's not – this is – so Plotter is a visual outlining and timeline tool on steroids because you can make relationships between different scenes and between different characters and stuff like that using tags and all that kind of stuff, right? But a lot of people don't use those advanced features. They just want to be able to visually see their plot line. I used to use a corkboard with note cards and string. gang, which probably tells you something about, along with the computer that I use, tells you something about how old I was. But for me, I mean, that was the way I could visually see it and organize it. When I found Plotter, I was like, oh, I can clean up my office and get rid of all the string that's all over the floor. And that my German Shepherd thinks is a toy. And it's like, oh, sweet. Toys on the wall.
I'm pretty that's sure that awesome. I saw a picture of your corkboard and you on the internet a few times. It looks like a conspiracy theory with all these strings going.
Pretty much. It looks like, you know, one of those detectives trying to catch the serial killer, and he's got arrows and, you know, blue string and pink string and green string, and they all mean different things. And don't forget what they mean. There's a note card on the corkboard that tells what each color of string means, you know, what? Because you can't forget.
One of the listeners has went ahead and gone the spreadsheet route. So I wanted to bring up William West, who said that spreadsheets work well. I use them to help figure out sweeping narrative arcs and fill in the details and whatnot. And I would ask, what is your comment to him?
I would just say you can do that with spreadsheets. I've seen people do it with spreadsheets. But if you look at Plotter, it's a simpler visual way to do that, to figure out those narrative arcs. The other aspect that we do have in there is story structure templates. Now, so for people that are plotters, Terry's like, what's that? I don't want to, you know. But there are story structure templates that explain to you, like, kind of where your story should be at that point. So until you get that innate sense of story structure, or you develop your own template that you use for your stories, it helps you to understand, like, what is the pacing? What is the pacing of a novel supposed to be? Because that's often one of the other issues that new writers have, is the pacing is off and their conflict is off. Their conflict, instead of ratcheting up tension each time, you know, at first it's a, you know, somebody in their family dies, and then the next thing they spill a cup of coffee. It's like, okay, that's not a, you know, we're not accelerating the tension here. We're suddenly dialing it back to, you know, or something weird like that. So
yeah.
You know what I mean? So there is help there that you don't necessarily have by using an Excel spreadsheet. It's a tool. It's a tool that you use to get that first draft done. It's not, I tell people all the time, show me your beautiful plotter file. It makes me kind of happy a little bit. You know, show me the first draft you finished using your plotter file. Way happier guy, because that's what it's for. So if spreadsheets help you get there and you've got a system that works, hey, that's cool. If I were you, I would take a look at Plotter to see if there's a different visual way of doing things that might help you define those narrative arcs better than you can in a spreadsheet. But if you've got a system that's working for you, use it to get the first draft done. That's your primary goal.
I tried all sorts of different kinds of plotting. Like, I used to just do outlines in Word. I tried index cards. I tried, you know, PowerPoint with little, you know, like making my own little index cards in there, all sorts of things. I finally started with Scrivener because you could do an outline with the cork board, and you could have, here's the part I write and here's a note about it. So it's a little bit more information, but it still was not very satisfying for me. I didn't like it. And then when I found, I don't even remember how I found Plotter. I mean, I think Ryan maybe had shared it on Facebook, and I went, oh, that looks really interesting, this visual, because part of it was the timeline aspect of it, not just showing the structure of my story and where my characters are going, but like I can have a line for each character. I can have a line for the overall timeline, because, you know, my story takes place over a period of time. And the part that helped me the most was I want to know what's happening off, like off screen, like in between scenes. So I made another one where it's like, hey, this stuff is happening, but it's never going to make it into the story. So I can just kind of judge like how much all this stuff happened. This is how much time would have had to pass. And once I plugged my existing story, I was a pantser because of, I didn't like the plotting. And once I plugged my existing story in there, I could suddenly see all of the holes. And that's when I went, boom, this is amazing.
I know that as a writer, what I do now is radically different than what I did when I first started. It's always a process of finding the little things you can do or the big things you can do to make your process better. And sadly, when you go down the line, you may find things that don't help you, that in fact hinder your process. And that's just part of finding what works for you. Something that Matt had said is that it's just a choice between if it works, don't fix it, and just because it works doesn't mean it's the best way to do it. And that's totally true. And I've been both ways down that particular road. And The individual is going to have to make the call for themselves. Only by trying something can you see if it's going to work for you. I've tried outlining in a more general sense on Word document and decided that it killed my creativity. So I avoid it like the plague. I don't want to spell out the story ahead of time, because then my juice to write the story goes away. So just because that's me does not mean that's you. So I don't feel that all pantsers are that way. That's just me.
Right. And I mean, I would. Oh, go ahead.
William says, can we build narrative structure templates from scratch?
Yes, you can build your own templates. You will find one in our starter templates now that's called the Sleuth's Journey, which was made by a mystery writer that parallels the hero's journey for mysteries. And basically I made it and just shared it with everybody. Now you have access to it all the time. But you can make your own, and we actually have a community template section on our website where you can share your templates with other people. So you can create your own narrative template. And going back to what Terry said, like, a friend of mine just recently was like, you've got to try this new writing software. Because I use Plotter for planning, and then I write in Scrivener. And the reason I write in Scrivener is psychological. I open up Scrivener, my brain goes, oh, we're fiction writing. And if I open up Word, it goes, are we writing a blog? Are we editing something? What are we doing? If I open Scrivener, that's the only reason I use Scrivener. I don't use Scrivener for nearly what it's capable of, but I just use a psychological trick. I open Scrivener, my muse goes, oh, we're writing fiction. A friend of mine was like, you've got to try this writing software. And I went, okay, fine. And it took me about 10 minutes to go, nope, this is not going to work for me, because I know myself and my process. And I went, that just doesn't fit. I'm not saying it's not a good software for some people. It is. I can see it. I can see how there's little things in there that are good ideas. They just don't work for me. So there's going to be some things, but it didn't hurt me at all to go open up a free trial of that program and try it and see what happened. And if you open up a free trial of Plotter and you're just like, this doesn't work for me, okay, I kind of understand that. Everybody has a different process. But if you fiddle around with it, a lot of times you'll find, hey, there is some way that I can use this, or something here that's a little gem that I can apply to my process and basically make my process more efficient. Because that's really what I did with Plotter. When I implemented Plotter, it just made me faster. That was all. And for me, I'm like, I need to be faster. Clearly, I like to eat. My wife likes nice things, so I have to make money with this writing thing. So, you know, I mean,
I feel you.
I had to do something about it. Yeah. I mean, Terry, you like to eat. I can tell.
I do. Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah.
That's how my wife bought me an edition of Dragon Naturally Speaking. Mm. And I've dictated a couple of dozen novels at this point. It took a while and several false starts of me getting into using it, but I was like, there's something here. There's something that I think will make me more productive. And even when I felt like it wasn't working, I'd come back to it and try to figure out how I could use it more effectively. And now I can't imagine writing without it. I'm a linear writer, so I go from first word to last word of the novel without anything jumping out of order. And it's just perfect for the way that I create things. But it still took me quite a while to make it happen. And I'm a slow typist, so dictating works better for me. It's faster.
Yeah, I tried dictating. I can't do it, but I type 120 words a minute, believe it or not.
I type 30 words a minute.
Oh my gosh, me too. I'm maybe 35 or 40 on a good day.
I'm lightning. I've had people watch me. I went to a write-in for a nano event one time. A friend of mine, like, come to this nano thing. And I usually don't do that because you don't get anything done. But I put in my headphones because actually there were like three people there that were irritating me. And so I put in my headphones and I just started to type. And I got in the zone, didn't realize that I got in the zone. And so I'm sitting at Barnes & Noble and I'm like just zooming away on my keyboard.
Beating your keyboard to death there.
Pretty much. And then all of a sudden I like kind of come out of it and I realize there's people around me. There's people staring at me and I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, are you writing real words? Like, we can't believe that you're typing that fast and actually writing something. I'm like, yeah, I'm writing something. And they were like, there was just this group going, what is wrong with that guy? I was like, I don't know.
I have that happen, but it's because I handwrite my first drafts usually. So this is, it's a good old composition notebook. And this is actually, I was working on this outlining and I'm working on stuff earlier, but I was taught by nuns. This is my handwriting.
It's ridiculous, dude. It makes you feel like you failed preschool and kindergarten. She is what happens if you actually pass kindergarten and first grade actual drawing and be able to do stuff.
To be fair, I was kicked out of preschool because I would not nap. I would go read books. So there is that. I was that child. But you know, you have people come around, it's like, okay, so whatever tool I need to have as little distraction as possible. So by sitting and writing and doing stuff very analog for that first bit, with note cards and multicolored pens and the notebook, then my brain goes, ooh, creative, just sit and work. And I'm not distracted by, you know, the stupid screen and going, ooh, I can go look for this, I can look at that. But if I'm writing with someone, then it's okay, we're here, we're on, I don't want to waste anyone's time, let's get going. And then it's typing as fast as, you know, the brain can do the words.
There's a reason that I don't...
You have, like, things across your knuckles from the nuns.
No, because there was only one nun, and she was a librarian. And actually, my great aunt on my mom's side was in the convent for years and years and years. So she would send me French books.
Nepotism.
To go ahead and nepotism. Show the opposite of her amazing handwriting, there's a reason I don't handwrite my first novels, and it is this.
Yes. Fog of law.
Good luck on reading any of that.
You stole my pad.
That's me too. I had a junior high teacher who I started typing assignments in junior high. Because first of all, I was already a good typist. I started when I was like 8. My grandpa gave me a Royal typewriter. First book I ever wrote was on a Royal typewriter. And so it was junior high. And this teacher is like, everybody else is writing their assignments and I'm typing them. And she goes, from now on, you will handwrite all of your assignments for me. And I said, okay. And I turned in one assignment that was handwritten, and she handed it back, and she just had this look on her face of just
I've seen hell. Horror.
And she was like, from now on, you will type every one of your assignments. She goes, it took me hours to grade this because I had to decipher it. She goes, is this hieroglyphics? What is going on here?
Like, the sad thing is, I look at my own handwriting and I go, what is this? Is this English? What does this say?
Oh, yeah. Wake up in the middle of the night with a notepad next to your bed. Oh, good luck, my friend.
Zombies
I'm like,
are dead.
What was I dreaming about? Like, this apparently is horrible. I was apparently back in ancient Egypt and creating cats on the wall of a cave because there is nothing here that resembles English letters.
Christine Catherine Rush.
Maybe I was dreaming in Aramaic or something. I don't know.
Yeah, Christine Catherine Rush, Dean Wesley Smith's wife, said that she writes stuff down at night, and she's had some real winners when she wakes up in the morning and has like a note that says, zombies are dead, with the words underlined, and has no idea what it meant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Water is wet. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Water is wet. Oh, that's a great tagline. Hollywood's like, we can make a trio out of that. We can make 3 movies out of that. Great. That's awesome.
Oh, Matt. Okay.
Stop it.
What's going on?
Matt says the biggest problem with handwriting is that a red squiggly line doesn't appear under it. It's spelled correctly.
That's true. I had somebody ask me the other day, they said, name something that you're not good at that starts with N. And I said, spelling. And
nice.
Is that wrong? I mean, I don't know. I was confused.
Can't believe I laughed at that.
Come on. It might have been a low-hanging fruit, but it was tasty.
Well, it was low-hanging, all right.
I'm going to use it, though.
Some kind of cancer, you know. Terry's process is hopeless. Don't ever try and get him to do anything else, because he'll just screw it up even worse.
Well, but that's what's interesting, is people like, because I used to be like, oh, you have to write every day. And then I met these people that are just binge writers. Like, I write every day. I have to write every day. If something's wrong with me, if I don't write every day, my wife's like, do you need to go write so that you will not, you know, like, kill the dogs or something? You know, you're grumpy. Go write something. And but then I meet these people that are binge writers that they like, and they go, I just think about my novel for like 3 months, and I lock myself in the basement for 4 days and write 50,000 words. Cool. I mean, if it works for you, it works for you. For me, no, that didn't work. Like, I need more structure and organization, because that actually, so the opposite of Terry, it helps me feel more creative if I know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. If I know the direction
completely
I'm headed,
valid.
I mean, I don't know everything that's going to happen, but I know my direction to certain basic milestones, and I know, like, what clues do I need to leave, because this is how the murder happens and things like that. And it works for me, but I never claim this works for everybody. You know, everybody has a different process, so they have different levels of structure and organization that they need. And one of the coolest things about Plotter is that it just feeds into that. You can have as little or as much structure as you like. You don't have to. There's nothing that says, oh, you don't have enough scene cards in this. Delete file. No, it doesn't work that way.
So. Well, what's nice is, like, you can go through and, like, you can do, like, your tent poles. You can do, like, you know, whatever your, you know, specific scenes you know you need to have. Mm-hmm. And then you write, and you can go in and sort of fill in the blanks as you go, like, as, you know, like, review it. And then you can, you know, tag your characters, tag your places, and then you can filter them. And you can, one of the things that I like the best is, like, if you have, like, two points of view and you have one main character throughout, and then you're like, oh, look, there's, like, I just went 9 chapters without this other person showing up or not even being mentioned. By the time we get to that person, they're going to forget about who Mary even was. Sorry, Troy. You know, so it's kind of nice to be able to, like, you know, filter them that way and then go back. Oh, you know, maybe I need to move this chapter here, or at least go into this chapter and mention this person again so they don't forget about that person when they appear later on in the story, especially if they're the murderer.
Yeah. My writing process involves writing the book and then giving it a read through as I'm usually, for me, it's cutting words out rather than adding things in. But there have been places where I'm like, you know, I haven't seen this person for a while. I think I need to weave them into this particular chapter and make that happen. But as somebody that writes military science fiction and space opera, I will find that I get somewhere in the middle of the novel and I'm like, oh, I could do this really great thing, X. And it changes the entire trajectory of the novel going forward. If I was still using a product like Plotter, I would have to delete all of the milestones after that, because I've just taken a left turn. I'm going to have to figure out where I'm going from there, because I have no idea. And one of the reasons that I'm a pantser, a discovery writer, is because I do that to myself regularly. I'm writing to entertain me, and I'm just lucky that I have other people that like the style that I write. And so when I find something that just, like, oh, I could do this, I do it. I just do it right there.
Well, and there are times when I do that, and then I just revise the rest of the outline, either at the time or later on. Because I always tell, I have two different sections that I use in Plotter. I use what I plan to write, and then I do the same thing. I summarize what I wrote every day, because, oddly enough, what I plan to write and what I actually write don't always match up. I know it's a shock, but it doesn't always happen, even when you're a planner. And so, but then I can go back and I can see, am I still on track? I can check my work. Okay, did I totally screw this up? Or am I still good, just headed a different direction? So there's, for me, it's a way to basically check my English homework. That's what I'm doing.
I just make it up as I go. That's the way it works for me.
I noticed Plotter says it exports to Scrivener.
Yes, mm-hmm. And to Word, either way. To Scrivener. Yeah, I know.
It's a .x. So if you write in, like, some sort of, like, open source thing, you can use it there as well.
Paul, Word is like the best writing program ever.
For you.
For me.
Sponsored by Microsoft.
I am Bill Gates' towel boy.
I wanted to lead him for the channel, but I can't. People like that.
Yeah, I use Word for editing, and the primary reason I use Word for editing is it's kind of the industry standard for editing, and that's how it works. So I adhere to the industry standard, but I am not a Microsoft person per se. Like, I use Excel minimally to do accounting, because I have to do accounting because I have to run my writing like a business. Again, the food, wife, nice things part of things.
You know, before I started using Dragon, naturally speaking, I would write in a regular text editor. I prefer the cleanness of writing in just a regular text editor. But Dragon works really well with Word. And so for me, I switched to Word because I was getting more effective dictation that way and having to correct less errors. But I still just use it like I don't have it show me anything on the screen. I don't have it tell me anything is misspelled. I don't even use spell check inside of it. I just use it as a plain text piece.
Okay, so just a place to deposit things.
Exactly.
As an efficiency thing, which is, again brings us back to efficiency, which is just, I mean, this is really, for me, what the whole thing was about. Like, when I adopted Scrivener over Word, the reason was it was more efficient and I had the ability to focus better. Yeah. You know, when I adopted Plotter, it was about efficiency. This made my process faster because I liked writing in Scrivener, but I don't like plotting in Scrivener. And so now I have my plot open on one screen, my writing open on another, and I can look back and forth if I need to. But most of the time, I just get in the zone in my writing space. But if I need to, I can look back and forth. At the end of the day, I summarize what I wrote. I put it over in Plotter for me to deal with later in the revision process. And for me, that's a super efficient process. I write novels faster. When I get them done, my first drafts are cleaner. All those different types of things, right? So it works, that efficiency part of it works for me. And that's really, for me, what a lot of it's about is efficiency. Mm-hmm. Like, plus, to me, it's more fun, right? You need to have fun writing. For you, plotting, Terry, plotting would not be fun.
Not
for me,
fun
that's
at all.
Part of the fun of the process is I'm like, I like coming up with new ideas and fleshing them out. So for me, that's part of the fun. And I tell people all the time, man, this writing for a living job is hard enough. You don't need to make things not fun. There are enough things that are not fun that we don't always enjoy doing, but there are easier ways to make money. So you might as well make this as fun as you possibly can.
I'm that guy that watches a television show and there's a big plot twist that I'm sitting there with my mouth open going, oh, I love it. That's me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't help but analyze story. It happens all the time. Yeah. Annoys the people next to you. Sometimes you learn to do it quietly. Because you want to stay married and stuff like that.
Nope, I have not learned that. I will sit and watch certain things, and it will be, you realize this is going to happen in the next 5 minutes. How do you, because this is the person who wrote it, these are the tropes, and this is what we're doing.
You are a buzzkill.
I just go, ooh, 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 ooh. And then, like, everyone around me goes, don't tell us if you figured it out. And I write it on a piece of paper and stick it, fold it and stick it away just so I can show that I'm right.
It depends. Yeah. A lot of the stuff that we'll watch together. So my husband and my two teenagers, we'll watch like the 911 series that Ryan Murphy writes, and it's very formulaic. And there was one episode we were writing, and there was the discovery of a serial killer. And before you even get in, like, he's going to have mommy issues, and there's this. And, of course, those are going to be snickerdoodle cookies. And, yes, there's going to be hot cocoa. And, Paul's like, do I need to take notes? No, this was just tropey as all get out. And, of course, we're like, well, it's a happy ending. How do you know he's not going to die? Because they're not going to kill this character who's going to have this happen later on. But, you know, sometimes if you're going to follow a formula because that's what your audience likes, and if you're trying to write in that genre,
you have to,
whether you're pantsing or plotting, you've got to follow that trail. So, I'm curious, with Plotter, you said there's some preloaded or available, I guess, beat sheets, for lack of a better word.
The templates, yeah.
There templates. Are the templates.
Yeah. Story templates, plot templates, whatever. Yes.
Are they broken out by genre? Like, is there a romance one? Is there sci-fi? Which romance ones do you have? I know there are a few of them.
There's 30 of them. We have Romancing the Beat. Then the romance beat sheet, and then the 7 romantic comedy beats. This is off the top of my head, not looking. So there might be other ones.
Yeah, there are also some user-created ones.
Okay.
So authors have come in and created, saved their own templates, uploaded them. And so it's kind of cool. You can go into the into the user-created area, and you can see all the books they've written. So you can find your favorite author and see what kind of structure they use.
That's 7 romantic comedy beats,
Romance beat sheet, romancing the beat.
Romancing the beat, if you're writing, if you want to write romance or you're intending on having like strong romantic subplots, Romancing the Beat by Gwen Hayes, it's a really, really good book to pick up. It's
You know what it's also good for? You know what it's also good for and I'm adapting it for? Is thrillers. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, it, yeah.
Think about
it. It's an emotional.
It's the same, the same beat. It's the same beats, just different language. So you that just, I'm a total story structure nerd. So I'm like opposite of Terry. Terry's like story. Ah, I'm like, I'm a story structure nerd.
Story structure is good. I just have the tropes and the structures that I like to write already in my head.
Which is beautiful. But to me, a new story structure book comes out. I'm like, I'm reading it. I don't care who wrote it. I don't care if it's good or bad. I'm going to read it and find out for myself. And so I read some really horrible things too. But and I'm not going to name any names. It's just not going to happen. But you think about the more about story structures is similar than is different. So when you look at the different ones, like for mysteries or romance, well, what's the difference? The language that we use. What's the difference between the hero's journey and the sleuth's journey? The hero's journey is set up for kind of a fantasy action adventure type thing. The sleuth's journey is set up for mystery. What's the difference? The language and the tropes that we're talking about and the stuff that we're using. But the more you study and get that innate sense of story structure, the more you realize these are all similar. So when I look at Romancing the Beat, I go, this is a thriller plot with romance. There's romance here. But if you look at it from a thriller point of view, using just slightly different language, you can go, oh, that actually is just a brilliant way to create a story. It doesn't matter what the genre is. So there's that. So that's me. Anyway.
Nope.
Hang on a second. There we go, I think. Yeah, so there's the romance and the beat. There's all this stuff since we're talking about it. All the different beats there.
Well, and you can see all the different templates that are there, and there's a lot of them. Like one of them that I think is really underused is the Pinero screenplay method. Because if you look at movies like Die Hard follows this almost exactly. It follows it almost exactly.
All the Die Hard movies fall exactly like this.
Well, yeah, all the Die Hard movies. I mean, they're all slightly different plots, but they're the same.
Yeah,
that's why my German Shepherd's name is McLean, after John McLean. Because who hasn't wanted to go in your backyard and yell McLean and have your neighbors? I mean, come on.
I wonder which one of those would fit best for like the Fifth Element.
The Fifth Element, I know I've seen a Blake Snyder beat sheet on that because it hits it very well.
Save the Cat hits it really well. Also, a three-act structure, simple three-act structure, which is what's interesting is Save the Cat is a three-act structure with more details.
Yes. Yes, it is.
If you take the standard three-act structure in Plotter and you add in more details, you have Save the Cat. Now, we don't have a Save the Cat template in Plotter, you'll notice, because there's a copyright issue. However, there may be a video on YouTube featuring a certain individual who you may have seen in this video already, who shows you how to make your own Save the Cat template. Just throwing that out there that I can't give it to you. I can't give you mine, but I can show you how to create one. So if you go on YouTube, and Jessica Brody, who wrote Save the Cat, writes a novel, is actually a Plotter user. So,
Look at that.
We are story nerd pals. We email back and forth and talk from time to time. And I'm actually doing a workshop with her on March 11th because we're story nerd pals and we're like, ooh, story structure, fun. Ah. So anyway.
And
You're not the only one who sees that. The hero's journey is actually also a three act structure with slightly different language and details. This is common. So Romancing the Beat is four phases, right? But it's not a four act structure. It is a three act structure with act two split in half at the midpoint. It is 2A and 2B. Those are those two acts. Phase two is act 2A. Phase three is act 2B. It's just that it is, and you can argue with me later if you want. That's fine. It's okay if you're wrong. You're okay. It's fine if you want to be wrong.
People are wrong all the time.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it? It's just...
why do they insist
I'm on... usually...
Why do they insist?
Yeah. I know. It's just strange. I'm usually wrong. Usually my wife knows the right thing when she's around. And I'm usually... I know a lot of wrong... I happen to be wrong a lot around her. I don't know.
She's brilliant.
She is. Clearly, I married up in so many ways.
Bail now. Bail often.
I'm out.
I could hand you a shovel, a steam shovel, and I'd be more than happy to, but we've only got a few minutes left.
Yeah, no.
Matt says, don't worry, this audience will argue with anyone just to see where it ends up. Yeah, you know, there's some truth to that.
They will not.
Yeah.
You'll interject some kind of reference to something carnal or whatnot and drive us down a path of destruction. That never happens in this show.
Well, sure. Actually, let's go ahead and plot out the erotic novel. Why not?
Well, you know, I was thinking in my head.
You wouldn't have to have tent poles for that story. It would be something completely different.
I wonder what the beach sheets for the story would look like.
But plotting out erotica can be hard. Steamy. Anyway.
It's difficult to be flexible.
Difficult to be flexible. Yes. Veronica, you're oddly silent. I don't understand. What's happening?
She says she's just as, you know, just as tough as we are, but she's always quiet.
I am. Yeah, no, that's not what my pseudonym said.
Chuck, you shut up now. You shut up now.
It's obviously VI. That's where real people write. I in fact did write some in VI when I was working as a Unix system administrator. So there, take that.
We are not doing this again. We are not doing this again.
I don't have enough coffee left for that.
Don't make me pull out my stiletto.
I'll get my Emax jacket on.
What size stiletto do you wear?
Let's see. What did you do?
13s. 13 wide.
No, 13 triple wide. With you know, a sole about yay big. That's my idea of a heel. Yeah. Oh, God.
So kitten heels.
Yes. And now the chat has broken down into VI versus Emacs, looking for an exit point. Why don't you tell folks where they can find and perhaps try out this program to see if it is right for them?
You can find Plotter at plotter.com, so plotter.com. And you can find out about the pricing structures, all the options, learn more, and get a free trial right there.
He says it so calmly.
He does.
Yeah.
He's a killer.
And you can check out our YouTube channel, too.
He's a serial killer.
If you can distract yourself from watching videos about VI, you can find on our YouTube channel.
Do you have any idea what's going to happen in the After Dark episode now? You have any idea what you've started? Damn it.
There are all kinds of videos about plotting and Plotter, and we actually interview a bunch of authors, and you can see how they use Plotter, and some of them might be your favorite authors, and so it can help you see how someone else has taken this and made it their own process.
And see, if you were writing in VI, you could use regular expressions to go ahead and change lots of things.
So you could do the same thing in Emacs. You could actually do the same thing in Scrivener.
In text editor.
Use regex in Scrivener.
You can.
It's kick ass if you know what you're doing. If you don't, you fuck up everything.
We are going to go ahead and we're going to leave out of here. We'll be starting the After Dark show. The ones that are patrons on the various platforms, we'll get a link to that, and you can ask your questions of Roland and Troy when we get there in 10 minutes. So thanks everyone for listening to this.
But first,
Paul is going to take us out. I was going to get there. I was going there.
You're such a loser as a host. If you would like to send a comment or a question about this show, you can send an email to show at therobotsociety.com. You can find me at Mastodon at Paul_E_Cooley at VYRSE.social. You can find us on Facebook at listeners of the Dead Robot Society Facebook group, or Terry Wrangles All the Madness. You can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/DRS podcast to see way too damn many cats and what we look like. Two of us. It's very bad. Very, very, very bad. I've been meaning to talk to you about that, Veronica. If you want to support the show,
so much I can do with this, dude. Makeup only covers so much.
You can find us at patreon.com/DRS podcast and buymeacoffee.com/DRS podcast, where for as little as $1 a month, you can help. You get access to exclusive content like DRS After Dark, which we're going to do momentarily if I can get through the rest of this outro.
Nope.
And at the $10 level, you get your name read, and our $10 patrons are Tony L. Joy, Rick Shaw, Lisa Slack, Isabel Cushy, and Tim Dieterreiter. Thank you very much to all of our patrons for helping us pay hosting bills, which, by the way, as of today, we are no longer officially a Podhoster. We are now moved over to Libsyn. You should not see any changes in the feed, but now we're also, that means we're on Amazon ACX podcasts, I would Spotify, as well as Apple. So we're now kind of branching out. So I finally got that done. So stop haranguing about it. All right. So was there something else I was supposed to say? Oh, yeah. There's that. See, Terry, you screwed up everything.
That's my job.
We have to now admit that we are not going to admit ourselves to a 12-step program because we love our caffeine and we have no problems. I swear I only have 12 cups a day. If you like coffee, visit CorpseCoffee.com. Check out their array of coffees, boutique teas, wonderfully weird web comic, and tell them DRS sent you. Visit CorpseCoffee.com and get the dead in your cup. Now, can we get out of here?
Yes, we can get out of here.
Okay. Roland, Troy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
I'm sorry Terry's a shitty host. I had expected better, but he hasn't done this.
I don't know what I've given him to make him expect better. I don't know how this happened.
Years and years of disappointment. I can always hope.
It's like we're married or something.
Oh, have we been accused of that? Somebody at the con thought we were...